Hello, Master. It's been a while.
We are off on an adventure!
This is good. When it gets strange like this, it's a good thing.
For what it's worth, I've got a good feeling.
Trust me, Hera, I'm excited. This is my excited face.
Get ready to be impressed.
You ready to be impressed, Tam?
I'm completely ready.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Geeky Bubble, part of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. I am your host, Jenna Marie, and with me is the Ahsoka to my Rex, my mom, Maria.
Yay!
Ma, this is our last Clone Wars episode.
Yeah, I'm a little bit teary.
It's an end of an era.
I was just actually thinking that. I was just going to tell you, you know, okay, let's do this. Let's end this era.
Yeah, craziness. And to think when we started way back, we had no idea that it was going to end this
It was just going to be Rebels.
Yeah, it's going to be Rebels. But then when we started Clone Wars, the end was technically with Yoda's arc.
Yep.
So we didn't know when we started that we were going to have this season. So it's been a crazy ride.
Yet indeed.
With that said, we're going to talk about the final arc of Star Wars The Clone Wars, also known as The Siege of Mandalore. Very intense. And we've seen it at least 3 or 4 times.
When you don't get cookies, you know it's going to be intense.
Cookies.
The cookies.
Fortune cookies. I was like, wait, dark side chocolate chip cookies? What's going on?
The fortune cookies. Wait, the moment I saw that, I was like, this is it.
Yeah. And I really liked that. At first I thought, because I didn't really watch the original movies in their original format. So when I saw the simple text, I thought, wait, what happened? What happened to the fanciness? I'm like, what's going on? So I didn't really appreciate it. And it wasn't until other people started talking about it and I read their responses that I thought, oh, okay, I understand what it's paying homage to. So
I actually noticed that.
Okay,
you know, this is it.
There's no going back.
Nope.
And so one of the things that I wanted to talk about was the fact that the arc starts off with Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Yes.
And what I really liked about the arc starting off that way is that this is the last Clone Wars setting that we'll see within the series. Obviously, we know that in Revenge of the Sith, you know, there's still some Clone Wars battles happening there. But this is the last that we see of the Clone Wars happening within the series. Because then what comes next is Mandalore. What comes after that is Order 66. So it was very sad. You know, it adds weight to everything that came before, because this is what the show's been about. So this is the last time that we see them in that setting.
And the funny thing is that you sit down knowing exactly what's going to happen.
Yes.
But you still want it to change. You still want it to be different. Like, you have that anxiety and that thing. And then in your head, it's two sides battling. The side that is logical and says, okay, this cannot be changed. This is it, what it is. And then the other side, which is like the hopeful side, like, I hope something changes.
It's so funny to think about it that way. And I know I was going to mention it later, but the fact that we know how Rex and Ahsoka, and we know that they survive, obviously, because of Rebels. But if we didn't have Rebels, imagine how much more stress we would have had.
Oh, my God. Like,
I would have been very... I mean, Ahsoka, I would have figured she would have survived, but I would have been so scared for Rex. And it's funny because in watching it, and I know I've mentioned this in other places where I've talked about the episodes, but in watching it, I knew what was going to happen, but at the same time, I was so nervous. and I, like, when Ahsoka was running at the very end, I was like, you know how you play Mario? When you used to play Mario, you used to jump with Mario. Yeah. I was like jumping with Ahsoka, hoping that she'd make it. And like, I know this, but my mind still couldn't.
Well, because it's that same anxiety, that same side of your brain that is still hopeful that something changes.
Yeah.
It's the same side that makes you, you know, like, oh my God.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing. It's been an amazing ride. Yeah. This is awesome.
And what I also really liked about the beginning is how it starts off with the clone troopers, but at the end, it ends with the stormtroopers.
Yeah.
So it was a good... And the whole beginning and ending sequences are very parallel. You can parallel them together. And I just love how Dave Filoni made that happen.
Yeah.
Because you can't help but look at the beginning when you're at the end.
Yeah.
And see how far they've come and how everything has just crumbled.
I've watched like that those four episodes. I watched it like what, three, four
times
already.
Because we watched it initially as it was at first. And then
I watched them just because I wanted to watch them before, thinking, okay, we're going to come soon to the recording. I don't want to miss anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I watched them again.
Rebels, yeah. That's right, for their podcast.
And then here I am again watching them.
Yeah, I know.
And every time I just want it to be different.
Every time, right? Yeah. And it's funny because last night when I was putting the podcast notes together, I told myself I should just use Wikipedia. I shouldn't watch it because I know I'm going to end up crying. And I was like, you know what? I don't really want to read through everything just to get notes out of it. I'll just watch the episodes. I'll live through it. And of course, I end up sobbing again. You're sleeping and I'm sobbing. Something else that came up at the very beginning was Anakin mentioning Saw Gerrera.
Yes.
And how he thought using the fulcrum frequency that they were he was contacting them.
Yes.
I have to talk about this. So initially, and I know it was just implied. It wasn't really overtly stated in the Ahsoka novel where Ahsoka, she comes up with the fulcrum thing. But now they're attributing it to Anakin. Ken. And I don't like it. That's like the one thing I didn't like about this arc.
But you know what? It does make sense because remember that to Ahsoka, he's still her master.
Oh, not always,
and a good man. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Ahsoka doesn't really know that he is Vader.
Yeah, I know.
So what better to play homage to her master than using something that he created? You know what I'm saying?
I like that. You see, this is why I like it talking with you, because you put a spin on it in the way that I'm like, okay, I appreciate it now. But I still, I don't like the idea, like on a simple, basic level, of a woman having created it and now being given to a man as he originated it. So I didn't like that on a basic level. Because I really thought, oh man, Ahsoka came up with this awesome thing that eventually involved Kallus, that involved Cassian, and who knows how many other people.
But my question to you is, was there ever clearly implied that it was Ahsoka?
Well,
or was a seed that may have been put there just to make you think?
Well, I mean, the way that it planned out, she was talking with Bail, and then all of a sudden she comes up with this name. So, you know,
maybe she heard it before. That they said that
I know that they can
manipulate
it in a way, but I still don't like how they in a way had to change it the way that it was originally seen from some of the fans.
Yeah.
So I was just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I appreciate it because to me it's her way of staying connected
to Anakin. I got you.
Because that's her master, and you see it through the whole episodes how she's worried about him. She wants to protect him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know?
Very true. But her belief in Anakin is really what screws her over in the end.
Yeah.
But that and Maul.
But you know, it is what, you know what they say, that is not the destination, but the journey.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she still has a journey to go through.
Exactly. And one of the things that really stood out to me for Anakin was how he said, it all makes sense now. If Ahsoka hadn't left the Order, then she wouldn't have been where she needed to be. And he also says, it's the only way to look at it. So I wrote that in my notes because I'm not going to remember it off the top of my head. But I wrote down, it's interesting how he wants to give it some galactic reason. He's trying to justify why things happen the way they do. I wonder if it's because he thinks he failed her. So through this reasoning, he takes the blame off himself. And maybe he thinks of his own actions as, quote, They had to happen for a reason, end quote. Or it could be that there was a reason she left him that didn't have to do with him personally. He has a problem with letting go, so if she had to leave because of some higher purpose, he'd be okay with that, and that's why it makes sense.
Well, I see it. I see it twofold. I see it in two different ways.
Okay.
The one way is where, like I say, I watched it like four times now. Okay. So I see Ahsoka as that bridge. To me, and this is how my mind works it out, if it wasn't for Ahsoka, there will be no hope of anything else after.
How do you mean?
Like, to me, Ahsoka is the hope that things will change.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. That things will move on, that things will happen, whether now or way in the future, but things will happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one way I see it. And the other way I see it is you have to understand that Anakin, the problem that Anakin always had was that, like you said, he could not let go of things. Mm-hmm. He could not detach.
Yeah.
Whenever you have a situation where you cannot control, but you still want to feel you're in control.
I gotcha.
You give it a meaning. You give it a purpose, a name.
Yeah, that actually falls in line with what I'll talk about with Dave later with the blue lightsabers.
Yeah. So that's the other way I see it. That because of his own internal struggles, he had to give it that label. He has to see it that way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because when I first, actually the first three times I watched it, I really didn't pay attention to Anakin. So when the fourth time for taking the notes, I heard him say that line, I thought, oh, I wonder what this is all about. Because honestly, Anakin, he's a character that I understand he has many layers and there's a lot of things to analyze about him, but it's not something I prefer doing.
Yeah, he is like a rabbit hole. You really don't want to go down that rabbit hole because you really don't know where you're going to end.
Exactly.
So you avoid it.
And it's like, I already know where he's going to end, so I don't really want to think too much on what he's saying. But it was interesting how he went about saying
it. But yeah, I did notice what he said. And to be honest, as I kept watching it, his words kept sounding in my head because after the fourth time, like I said, I see Ahsoka as hope. I see Ahsoka the way I saw Padme and the way I saw Leia. They are the central characters to me.
Yeah, yeah.
They are the force that unifies and pulls everything together.
True, very true. Yeah. And actually, now that you mentioned Padme, I'm sad that Ahsoka never had a moment to share with her. With everything that happened. And then Plo Koon was another character that I was sad that Ahsoka never really had another moment with. It was always about Anakin, which is another reason why I'm like, let me move on from Anakin. because there were so many other relationships that she had developed throughout the series, Rex being one of them. So I like how they had that whole thing at the very end together. But anyway, going to when Bo-Katan is there with Ahsoka and they're talking about why they need the Republic to be present. It was very interesting to see Anakin, see Bo-Katan and Obi-Wan interacting because Obi-Wan lost someone he loved.
Oh, yeah.
But he's not reacting so rashly.
He's maintaining his
composure.
His composure, yeah. You know?
And I'm like, Anakin, you have the perfect example right in front of you.
and you know something? To me, that shows that the ability of Obi-Wan to love was even greater than the ability of Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was able to maintain himself while at the same time love.
Yes.
While Anakin got lost in his love.
Yeah.
And you never want to get lost. Because when you get lost, you lose yourself. It's
you're capable of anything.
And it's the end. Not only is the end of who you are, but it's the end of the relationship.
Yeah.
You have to keep yourself
centered
and whole.
Yeah.
A couple means two. It doesn't mean one.
Oh, yes, this is true.
So, you know, I like that parallel, that comparison there between the one who was able to maintain the two
mm-hmm.
while the other one it's just the one.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm the one who's in pain.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the one who doesn't want to lose you, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And I know Dave actually had that final 8 moments of one of the episodes of Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian. He talked about, you know, Qui-Gon Jinn being the father figure and how that carries on through to the very end of the the saga with Return of the Jedi. You know, and I was thinking about that. And I'm like, well, Obi-Wan was never really the father figure, obviously. Yeah. But at least he was a good example for things that needed to be done the way that they needed to be done. In terms of, like, relationships, like we just talked about. There are other moments, and I especially love the moments between Ahsoka and Obi-Wan when they were arguing, but
they were not really...
They were in conflict with each other on what to do. And there were moments in that way that I thought he wasn't a good example, because Ahsoka, to me, was the best example in that when people need your help, you help them. He's like, that's not fair. And she's like, I'm not trying to be. And I really, really love the dialogue in those moments. So yeah, I like how Obi-Wan and Ahsoka were the best examples for Anakin, but Anakin just never follows through with those.
But you also saw that even through conflict, they were able to agree on something.
Yes,
you
know what I'm saying? To get to the middle ground.
And that's the thing. Yeah, that's
Anakin goes to the extreme.
Yeah, you don't have to agree with a person 100% on everything they think and say. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a balance. And it's funny because that's the word that just keeps repeating and repeating through the whole Star Wars saga.
Keyword for this, yeah.
It's balance. To me, Ahsoka and Obi-Wan represent that, because they were not 100% in agreement on how to do things, but they always managed to find a balance.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. And touching on that, you know, we see Ahsoka's natural inclination to help people. And I like what she says. This is why the people have lost faith in the Jedi, until I was reminded of what the Order means to people who truly need us. So I like how the previous arc was important, because that's what that line represents. She got to experience what the Jedi Order was supposed to mean through Trace and Rafa, and what the Jedi Order has become because of what happened to them.
And that goes to my point of she represents the hope.
Yes.
For the future. She's carrying that torch with her, even though she's not a Jedi, quote unquote, she's carrying that with her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's one of the seeds. You know how in the Yoda arc, we see how the Force is this, I call it like they're saving themselves, you know?
Yes, that's right. The Force is quieting itself for the right moment.
And Ahsoka is a vessel that they're using.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because she's going to carry forward the true meaning of what it means to be a Jedi, to be in that order.
What I really like about, and I'm thinking about Ahsoka the White, what I really like about that, her existence at that point in time, and I know a lot of people were thinking or saying, you know, why isn't Ahsoka help? She's around. Why isn't she doing anything about it? And it's because she has to wait for the right moment for her to be able to, you know, carry on that stuff or apply it in a real world situation.
You know, she's a torch. If you use it too much, you extinguish it too soon.
That's true. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And I was gonna mention Ahsoka the Great. That's why you see it in the end, in that great thing, because that is the start of her journey.
Yes, Ahsoka the Great as Gandalf the Great. I love Dave and his Lord of the Rings references. And then we go to the scene where is represented by the clones with the helmets, and they all have her facial markings. And I mentioned in Rogue Rebels how, and I thought of it in that moment where it's when we're at the end and you see all the spikes with the helmets on them, it's similar in that way. You know, they're there standing, paying respect to her, and she's paying respect to them. This time.
Yeah.
And then she drops her lightsaber, whereas in this scene earlier in the arc, she's given the lightsaber by Anakin. And, you know, Vader comes in and he takes it back, whereas Anakin was giving it to her. So I like how it's a reverse of what's happening at this point.
And to me, that goes to that scene where you and I just get shivers when Molt says to her, the Padawan
oh, yes.
one last lesson. And we think that last lesson is right then and there when they're fighting. But if you look at it and you think about it, everything that happens after is bits and pieces. It's first the fight, and then it keeps going. And in the end, when she lets go finally of yes. those two lightsabers and yeah. she drops them,
yeah,
that is when she finally
learns to
and
let then go.
And this is the part where that Ahsoka the Great and her journey beginning is like, oh my God, yeah. she is the hope.
Yeah, yeah.
She is that seed.
I really love that, the fact that he said those words.
Yeah.
And of course, the moment, like the first time I saw the episode, I the first time I heard those words, I knew exactly
yeah.
where that came from and where it was going. I was like, oh my God,
yeah.
it's the concept of letting go.
Oh yeah, it's
yeah. And we see it. We see her playing it when she's holding onto the ship. She lets it go then, not wanting to fight back against the troopers yeah. and so on.
So you keep seeing it until the very end when she just finally culminates yeah. into that.
So good. But touching on the lightsabers, I wanted to bring up something Dave said in Clone Wars Download, where he said, quote, Anakin knows enough about lightsabers to be able to alter the angle or frequency of the saber blade or crystal to make it more like his own. As far as the story goes, I wanted to show a clear connection between the master and apprentice relationship of Anakin and Ahsoka. So I decided to shift her lightsabers to blue, like Anakin's. Him tinkering with her lightsabers while she is gone shows that he is always thinking about her. And the lightsabers are then a representation of her in the story and his thoughtfulness regarding her. His changing the color can also be seen as him exerting control or being too protective, which is very Anakin. He means well, but often takes things too far when trying to express how he feels. Changing the sabers, modifying them, improving them shows his care, but also his ego, something that Ahsoka is familiar with. So the simple adjustment of the lightsaber color serves as many aspects of the relationship between the two characters. So I love how something so simple as changing the color of the lightsaber represents all of that.
Symbolism. Yes. And symbolism is powerful.
I love that.
You know, it's...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was very well done in how they did that. And did you have any other thoughts regarding those scenes?
For the first part? No, I think we can move on to the second part.
Yeah, so we go on to taking Mandalore, and one of the first people we see is Almec.
Yeah.
And I love that he tells Bo-Katan that the people will see her as an enemy for bringing the Republic, for violating this treaty that they established 100 years ago, which I forget who now. Dang it, I forget who told me. But the fact that, I think it was Sal. The fact that they mentioned 100 years ago implies that maybe with the Star Wars High Republic things that are coming out in the future, I wonder if they'll touch on that, like establishing that treaty with Mandalore. And
yeah, because I do want to know.
I want to know all that stuff.
All through that episode,
it was very emphasized.
It was like you have that moment in the beginning, right, where Almec says that to Bo-Katan, but then you also have that piece at the end where you have Maul. Is that the one where you have Maul in the cage?
I don't remember. Yeah. It's all a blur.
But regardless, whether it's in two or three, there's a connection between the two of them.
Yeah.
So you have Maul coming out in that box. Uh-huh. And one of the things it just resonates in my head is when Bo-Katan says, you know, we made these things for when we had to encage your...
Force wielders. Yeah.
Maniacs.
Yeah.
And she just doesn't say...
You maniacs.
Say, yeah. You know, she just doesn't say force wielding. Nah. She says force wielding maniacs.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm interested. I want to know, what was it? How come that these two groups...
We're always in conflict.
Conflict.
And we see it too in Rebels when Kanan is trying to show Sabine how to wield the Darksaber. And one of the things that Fenn Rau says is something to the effect of that the Mandalorians would use these weapons, use the Van races to combat against the Jedi. And at one point, Kanan says, oh, the Jedi won that war. You know, they were always in conflict with each other. I don't know whether these are still the canonical reasons why, but it was always because of Mandalore wanting to expand its territory. So it was constantly conquering other places and other cultures. And of course, the Jedi were opposed to that. So that's why they were always in conflict with each other.
So that was very interesting. Like, wow, like these two people.
Yeah, it's so good. And I always like how we see them working together. Yeah, with Sabine and Ezra and then Ahsoka and Bo-Katan. So I really, if the rumors, and I hate to bring this up here, if the rumors about Ahsoka being in season two of Mandalorian are true, then I would hope that they make
that connection.
Connection, yeah. Because she was present in a very vital stage of Mandalore's history. Yeah.
And the whole thing, like that you mentioned, that you always see them at some point or another working together, goes to balance. Like, yeah. You don't have to agree 100% with anybody. You don't have to be on one camp or another, but you have to find a balance.
Yeah. Oh, and also, you know, going back to Bo-Katan being classified as an enemy for doing this among her people, I can see that being the case because she brings the Republic in and the Republic becomes the Empire and the Empire takes over Mandalore. And they use those weapons that Sabine created against the Mandalorians. So it's like a domino effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, Maul, it all started with Maul, but Bo-Katan really, you know, made the final blow by bringing the Republic in. And then you can see why the Mandalorians are the way that they are in the Mandalorian series, because of everything that's happening in these episodes.
But it's like, you know, you don't know what the future holds. You can only speculate and work with what you have at the moment.
Exactly.
And at the moment,
that's
all she could have done.
Yeah, she was okay with it. She's like, I know that they're... But she didn't know that the Republic was going to be the Empire.
Exactly. she didn't know.
So and she was doing it for the benefit of getting Mandalore back for her people.
And she was also relying on the fact that she was working with a group of people that
she trusted.
She trusted, yeah. And they had given their word, you know, we're going to leave once we get more, we're gone.
Yeah.
And you know what? At that moment, that was the whole
situation.
It just so happened that when
all hell broke loose,
then that becomes something different. But she didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So
she was acting in the present.
Yeah.
Not really worrying about the future when it was, you know, when she was closer to it. But right now, she was worried about...
There's so much worrying you can do about the future. Yeah. That without affecting, you know, your present, you have to leave your present.
Yeah. So I really hope that Bo-Katan, because we saw Moff Gideon with the Darksaber, so I really hope this doesn't mean that Bo-Katan died. I would really hate for her to die off screen somewhere, because that would be stupid. Yeah. So if she does die, I would like to have that story elaborated.
Shown.
Because she deserves to have that story told and not just like one written off in some line, sentence or somewhere. Anyway, I like how when they're inside of the ship and Rex said, I didn't think to bring you a jetpack.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's okay. And
I don't need it.
What I really love is that laugh that Rex lets go.
Yeah.
And when she jumps out of it. Yeah. And like, I race you to the bottom. Oh, which is funny and sad because, you know, you have the ships falling here and her falling. And it also echoes at the very end of the series when she's falling. But
it's different way.
It's a different, here she's saving the clones and Mandalorians, whereas at the very end, she's being chased by the clones.
Yeah.
So. I also love Almec's armor. That was very regal.
Yeah, he's a poser.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. Which is why I don't trust him. I don't trust anything that comes out of his mouth.
No.
So when people say, oh, Jango Fett isn't a Mandalorian based on what Amek said, I'm like, I'm not going to trust some guy.
Amek, he only care about himself, power.
He'd talk down about anyone that he didn't like. So anyway, but I did like his armor. It was very ceremonial. It reminded me a lot of this concept art of Satine, of her wearing armor. And I thought, oh man, I wish I could have seen that actually take place in the show before she passed
away. It makes sense. Also, because
it's part of their culture,
and he didn't like Satine at all.
Yes,
you know,
it's true,
to trying to be better than her his mind.
Oh, and then how Ahsoka thinks it's messed up how they have Anakin spying on the Chancellor, and how he would not be happy about this. And Obi-Wan asks her to talk with Anakin, and she's like, I'm hardly into what defend the council's actions. I'm hardly the person
to do that.
Exactly, given her experience. But do you think that if she had found the time to speak with Anakin, would her talking with him or giving him some advice change anything? I mean, ignoring what we know happens, do you think that there was a possibility that something could have changed?
No, because Anakin would still be Anakin. Mm. And that's what goes to the whole falling for him, is that thing in his head that he has, that only what he thinks is the right thing, is the right thing. Only what he thinks is the solution, is the actual solution. You know what I'm saying? That he has that obsession in his head that he can control.
Mm-hmm.
So even if Ahsoka had spoken to him, he still would have been Anakin, and he still would have done what he did, because that was his way of keeping control.
Right. Yeah, it's true. I put down the question in my notes, and I put as the answer, I don't think so.
No, we can try sometimes to talk to people, give them advice, you know, give them examples, trying to show them a right way or a different way. But in the end, it's who the person is. The essence of that person is what determines the choice they're gonna make.
It actually reminds me of what Maul told Ahsoka. Every choice you've made has led you to here.
Yeah.
It applies to Anakin as well. Every choice he's made has led him to that, to do what he ends up doing.
Yeah.
So regardless of what you could have said, every choice he made before that is what is going to eventually push him to do what he does.
You know, that as much as Ahsoka loved Anakin, she didn't stay.
Mm.
And she didn't stay for a reason.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that goes to the essence of who she is.
Mm-hmm.
So Ahsoka telling Anakin something sweet and nice and beautiful or whatever it was will not have changed Anakin, because it goes to the essence of who he is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He would have still made the choices
that he did. Actually, it now reminded me of my friend told me that some people were talking on Twitter and mentioned how, you remember at the very beginning of Revenge of the Sith, they're in a battle over Coruscant because they go to save the Chancellor. And Anakin actually looks kind of happy.
Yeah.
Like, what is he happy about fighting in this battle? And a lot of people are like, oh, you could attribute that to him thinking Ahsoka's going to be back. It's going to come back. And I thought, oh, no, I'm going to cry now at the beginning of that movie.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you could think of it that way. Yeah.
But the thing is, that's just one small fraction of Anakin's whole mind and whole issue and all the problems that in his head he has.
Yeah. Especially, you know, when Padme's future is the thing that
drives him.
Exactly. That comes to the forefront of his mind. Ahsoka was just a speck.
Yeah.
Compared to the possibility of losing
Padme. It's one of those little things that you know what, when we say it's the little things that makes us happy, Ahsoka is one of those little things that makes Anakin happy, but it's not all that is Anakin.
Yes, exactly. And so we know that Maul is present here, and I like how he had that vision, apparently. He had a vision about Anakin and his role in the new order that's to come. It kind of reminds me of Star Wars Rebels, where he joins the Holocrons together with Ezra because he's looking to have a question answered. The episode is called Visions and Voices, and he's just so desperate to get something.
Yeah.
So it's just funny to know that he had a vision.
He is so used to having so many voices in his head that at this point where he doesn't hear anything, he's so desperate to hear something.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
The silence is too much for him to handle.
Yeah. So I like how this vision tells him of Anakin Skywalker, and that's the reason why he wanted to lure Obi-Wan. See, and I told this to my other two friends who do Star Wars Geek Girl. I love stories that go one route, but you can think about the other route, the alternate universe. Yeah. Like, what would have happened had Obi-Wan and Anakin showed up? I like that, thinking about those what-if situations. And I don't know. I feel like Maul could have died right there and then, because Obi-Wan and Anakin are forced to be reckoned with. That would have been a really cool parallel to Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan fighting Maul.
I don't think it would have changed the end result, but it would have been awesome still.
Yeah, it would have been very cool. Yeah. So I like to think about things like that and how he's just so desperate to know what the future is so he can anticipate it and try to survive it. Because that's who he is. He tries to survive whatever comes his way.
Yeah, because let me tell you something. Through the whole, like I said, the 3 or 4 times that I've watched all these 4 episodes, it just keeps resonating with me. We know there's a beginning. Everything has a beginning. And everything has an end. And we love to talk about destiny and history not being written in stone and whatnot. But if you really think about it, it's not about how we can change the future or how we could have changed the past if something else had happened. It's whatever happens in between those two, the beginning and the end. That's the part that we can change. That's the part that we can alter. That's the part that we can decide with our choices how it will go. But it's always going to be the same beginning and it's always going to be the same end.
That's true. Yes.
So,
actually, I don't know about the end, because the end could change depending on what route you take in the middle.
I'm talking in a more broader sense.
Okay. Got it.
You know, in a more universal kind of way, mm-hmm. where think about it in terms of life and death.
It's already determined that you're going to die.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So if you think in terms of that, what makes the story is the choices you make along the way.
Yes.
That's what makes it different. In the end, it may not be exactly what you hope for, but how you feel about it in the end is based on the choices you made in between.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is perception. And that's what maybe to us, we see as the ending being different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily that it really is, but we perceive it as different because of the choices we made.
Right.
And I love these 4 episodes because it just keeps me thinking about things.
Right, yeah. What I love most about Maul's vision is that he was right.
Yeah.
He was right about. But what's funny though is that nobody believes you because of the choices you've made before.
Yeah.
Nobody trusts you.
Yeah.
So I felt bad for him in that way because I'm like, man, you had it right, but the way you went about doing things
is what made people not believe you. You know, he had nobody but himself to blame. Because he could have done it so much differently. But he chose, like Anakin, he chose to do it all about himself.
Yes, it's very big ego. Yeah.
And that's what ended up being his doom.
Because it was right what Ahsoka said. You only seek to replace Sidious with yourself. You are the one who's seeking power. If you had approached the Jedi Order and said, look, I know what's going to happen, let me help you, they would have been a little bit more inclined, a little bit cautious, but a little bit more inclined. But the way that you went about doing it and the reason why, That's why people didn't want to go
for you
with what, like, with your vision, with your what you wanted. So yeah, I just, it's so funny, but also very sad.
Yeah, you know, you keep wanting to control. That's what's going to happen. Too many balls in the air, Mo. Too many balls in the air.
And then one of the things that he's also controlling at this point in time is his crime syndicate, Crimson Dawn. And I like how you see the three figures. One of them being, I was going to say Quinlan Vos, Dryden Vos from Solo. So that was really cool seeing those characters there, and it reinforces again how I wish there was another arc in this season where it focused on Maul and how he established that and how he became that person that we see in this final arc. So yeah, I really wish that we could have seen that in an episode format.
And we see that, you know, how the Empire or the First Order, everybody else seems to always go the route of The rebels are the cause of all this chaos and suffering because they destroy the only thing that control things. No, it was there. The seeds were there. They've always been there. And they're always going to be there regardless of who's in power.
Right.
You know, it's the little things that connect through the whole series, through the whole saga, through the whole universe.
Yeah. So moving on to Maul and Ahsoka, I like how he tries to lure her by using the information he extracted from Jesse, the clone.
Yeah.
Saying how you left because of the hypocrisy of the Jedi Council and how they were both tools for greater powers. And I love that this is his speech. This is how he's trying to, like, get her to join me. And together we can rule the galaxy. and I love that. Because he tries it with Ezra. Yeah. And Ezra's the only one who really, like, I'll give you a shot before he gets burned. But yeah, everyone else, even Ahsoka, is like, no.
But then Ahsoka had...
She did say,
yeah,
I will help you. But if Maul hadn't said
what he said about Anakin, things could have been a little bit different.
That's when Maul, and it's funny because in Phantom Menace, he only says like one line. So it's so funny to see him in Clone Wars where he's talking for minutes on end. I'm like, dude, you should have just kept your mouth shut.
Yeah.
If you wanted Ahsoka to help you.
Yeah.
And this is another situation where I really like, what if Ahsoka had gone with Maul? Like, how would that look like?
And I think that's the one thing that he sort of learned somewhat with Ezra.
Yes.
Because he doesn't say much. So he keeps his thoughts to himself. And in this way, he shows Ezra the possibility that, maybe this guy, you know, has
something of value.
You know?
Yeah, it's true. I actually do see it in Rebels because he's very vague about
what things. He's saying.
And
so it makes you think and it makes you want to give it a goal. Okay, let's try it.
Yeah, he shot himself in the metal foot when he told Ahsoka
about Anakin.
But it's true how he's insanely honest about the things that he's saying because he's right. I mentioned it earlier, but one of my favorite lines is when he says, every choice you have made has led you to this moment. And it's true. If she hadn't left the Jedi Order, she hadn't encountered Trace and Rafa, she would not be in the situation that she's currently in. And she wouldn't have the experience or the lessons learned to apply them in that moment. It's a very true statement about who Ahsoka is and how she's gotten to that point. Going back to the what-if situation, do you think that if he hadn't said what he said about Anakin, do you think she would have joined him?
As far as to the point where she sees she can no longer go alongside with him, yes.
Yeah.
Because she said it.
I will help you.
I will help you. And all he had to do was say something, give her an answer that was not the truth.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think that in her mind, she was like, okay, you know what? The Sith Lord is the worst thing, even worse than Maul. If I go along with Maul, maybe he helps me destroy it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I do think she would have gone along with him for as long as she was going to be able to.
Yes, yeah, because I feel like Maul would have tripped up somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And revealed his true plans. And then she would have been out at that point.
But then at that point, she would have been out in the sense that, okay, this is where we part. But she would have been close enough to him to actually strike a blow.
Yes, true. Yeah.
You know? And Ahsoka, to me, Ahsoka has always been a very good strategist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that she would have done it. Just because in her mind, she was already strategizing what was going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, man, I would like to read that story. And someone, I forget who, again, I keep forgetting people who say these things. But someone on Twitter said, I wish there was a, because in Marvel, they have a What If series where they talk about, like, what if Captain America wasn't Steve Rogers. I was going to say Steve Evans. It was Chris Evans. And it was, like, Peggy instead and all these other what-if situations. So I really like the idea of Star Wars having a what-if situation. And I thought, man, that would be really cool. And, of course, I freaked out when Maul said that one last lesson line. Yeah. I mean, it's just so good.
I see the Padawan needs one last lesson. But then the one last lesson is what freaked us out. But if you think about it, the context in which he said is totally different.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But I also love how the windows are shattered.
Yeah.
And they have like this very, and he's like, his hand is stretched out. I'm like, oh my God, this is like a Kylo Ren Rey moment. What's going on? but it was so good. and of course, they had that epic fight with the mocap actors who really... It just enhanced the whole thing. I think having real actors portray that fighting scene.
Yeah, when he does that thing where he jumps like three times in one
fall.
I was not seeing a cartoon. Yeah. You know, I was not seeing an animated figure doing it. I was actually seeing an actor doing it. It was really awesome.
Cool. It's really cool. And then of course, when the aftermath happens, you have Bo-Katan, who says, I wish I was good at something other than war. And because of that statement, I would really like to see Bo-Katan at live at some point, because she never really has the chance to rule and show that she's capable to be something else other than something that fights in wars
than
and
a warrior.
Battles. Than a warrior, exactly. So she's never really given that chance. So I would like to see that happen at some point. She's never really, again, never given a chance to do so, which hurts. And of course, we have that scene with Mace Windu, who was an absolute jerk.
He was Mace. Okay,
I know.
He was Mace. That's who he is. And you know what? Many people will not like it. But I really love how he twisted her own words against her.
It was evil.
No, it was not.
It was evil.
No, it was not. It was a very, very intelligent and very insightful at that moment.
It's true. Because but at the same time, it's like you don't end a conversation with a statement that has the other person ask, but why? You know, like, he left it intentionally in a way that would motivate her to ask for a follow-up to that statement. And then that's when he comes in with the burn. And I'm like, oh.
I don't know. I liked it.
Of course you would. You would. But anyway, I got into a conversation with someone on Twitter about it. And, you know, just highlight certain things from the conversation. Because he really brought up some great points and actually changed my mind on it. But Matt on Twitter, at Barbot Robot, you know, he was saying he's a Jedi and he's upset that she left. That seems to make a lot of sense to me. And then she begins to ask about sensitive information the Jedi are working on that he obviously can't share with her. So it's weird. So it's a weird presumption on Ahsoka's part. He's like, which is it, kid? And I said, that's still not an excuse for him to be rude. I'm sorry. You know, he should have said, I'm sorry, Ahsoka, but these are private matters. Thank you for your efforts. How hard is it for a Jedi to actually show compassion? Too hard, according to Mace's behavior. And Matt responds, maybe not. I think Windu takes umbrage at the at her presumption and still resents her decision to leave and find that, if not pleasant, totally reasonable. And then I said, if he resents it, then he and the others shouldn't have accused her for a crime she didn't commit and then proceed to mask it as a Jedi Knight trial. They betrayed her, plain and simple. That was a burn on Windu's part, and Rex reacted to it in the background, and he goes, oh, absolutely, I absolutely think it was an intentional burn on his part. But from Windu's point of view, Ahsoka was accused, acquitted, and the real perpetrator was found. The system worked. That's how all justice systems work. We're closer to Ahsoka's mind, so we sympathize with her. But I also get where Mace is coming from. The traitor is Ahsoka, not the trial system that correctly ruled in her favor. So I really like how he presented it that way, because
he presented it in a logical way while you are in an emotional state.
It's true.
You know? And this is why I loved it.
And he actually ended it with, don't get me wrong, I think this is a real tragedy in the Rift here, both in Mace's inability to see past his sense of duty to appreciate that they've driven away in an incredible Jedi, but also that this terrible experience exists to keep Ahsoka from coming back to the Order. But yeah, like I completely saw his point of view, because from Mace's perspective, the system worked.
Yeah.
She shouldn't have left, because it worked in her favor in the end. But you're right. I'm looking at it from an emotional perspective, which is she was betrayed.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. So I was very grateful for that conversation, because it actually helped me see it from Mace Windu's perspective. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that he's a jerk.
I know he can be a jerk, and he can be perceived as a jerk. He can come across as a jerk. But I loved it, because come on, you threw it out there. You open yourself.
You like it. You like it because you would be that Mace in the conversation. I would be the Ahsoka who would be offended. But anyway, and you know, a lot of people came up on Twitter saying, "Oh, Mace Windu sucks and whatnot." and I like Justin Bulger on Twitter. He puts out there that he's not the only one who's like that. And I'm like, it's totally true. All the Jedi were jerks. They were all jerks. It depends on the situation and why they were jerks. and Mace just shows it more often. So that's why I consider him the jerkiest of all the jerks. Because he just shows it more often.
Whatever.
But anyway, do you think that Ahsoka should have informed the Jedi Council when she learned about Maul? Do you think it would have made a difference had she told them?
No. It would not.
Ignoring what we know happens, do you think that would have made a difference?
I don't think so, because at the point that we are in right now, too many dominoes have fallen. I think that maybe more Jedi would have survived.
Maybe.
But in terms of the actual ending, it would still be the end. It would not have changed that end.
Got it.
It would have changed the perception of it, and it would have changed how many other people that knew what was happening were surviving and protecting themselves and whatnot. Yeah. But it would have actually still
I feel like it would have made a difference, especially if you mentioned it to Yoda, because then Yoda would have suspected something with Anakin and would not have maybe let him, because Anakin after that point chases after Windu, because Windu is going to arrest Palpatine. So like I wish that there was something there to hold Anakin back. To be honest, no, it wouldn't have worked out because Palpatine overtook anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing that like I say, what would have probably helped on was more people surviving than what actually survived.
I got you.
Because more people would have known and would have put themselves in a situation where they had more chances of surviving.
Yeah, especially if they were notified beforehand. Yeah.
But like, in terms of the actual end, no, I don't think it would have changed that. That's true. Would have still happened.
Yeah, sadly.
At this point, Palpatine was too powerful. He had control over so much.
He's too powerful to be left alive.
that it would not have actually changed the inevitable.
Mm. But you know what happens when you act like a jerk, Mommy?
What?
Karma. Because he got electrocuted and thrown out that window. Poor Mace. That was awful. Yeah. That was awful.
You know, no matter how jerk you are,
you don't deserve that. It's true. It's very true.
And I agree. Look, a lot of them, at some point or another, I felt that they acted like jerks.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying that they were perfect.
Oh, no.
Because they were far from it.
It's so true.
What keeps me aligned with the Jedi at some level is the fact that even through their imperfections, they always try to do the right thing. You know what I'm saying?
Even though it's not...
It wasn't the perfect way, they still tried. Yeah. Unlike others who just surrender to their egos and their minds of control and power, you know?
Or don't do anything at all.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, yeah, they were jerks. But, you know, as far as a jerk goes, I would choose the Jedi every single time over the other jerks.
It's true. It's very true. This galaxy is full of jerks. But you know who's not a jerk? Unhelmeted Ursa Wren. She looked so cool without the helmet. Oh, my gosh. She looked so much like Sabine. Like, you can tell where Sabine got her looks from. I was just like, oh, my God. But I'm sad she didn't say anything. Like, I wish she had said something in those moments.
It wasn't her time yet.
It was not, no. But one thing that I also really liked, Gar Saxon being present because he was in league with Maul. I wish Fenn Rau had been present.
Yeah.
In Bo-Katan's group, because that would have been really cool to set up the rivalry between them that we see later in Rebels. Because we don't know really. Like, I don't remember from the top of my head what. I just know that he hated Fenn. And I want to know why. Like, what caused it? And maybe it was because of his role in the Siege of Mandalore. So, like, I would have much preferred to have seen Fenn alongside Bo instead of, like, that one Mandalorian who just didn't have a name or a voice.
There's also ideals. Like, Fenn Rau was an idealist in the sense of his order, the protectors.
That's true. But still, what does a protector do? They protect. You protect Mandalore.
And the other one didn't. The other one, betrayed that whole principle. So it could be, you know?
But yeah, I still would have really liked to have seen him there.
Yeah.
Mommy, you can't take that away from me.
No, I won't try, my daughter. I'm just giving you something there.
But yes, Unhelmeted Ursa Wren was very cool. I also love the very fancy box they put Maul in.
Yeah.
I just love the whole design on it. It's very...
mystical.
Yes, very mystical.
They have the mask and the...
Yeah, those were the crusading...
The figures, yeah.
Those were the crusading Mandalorians. Yeah. But very cool. I very much like that design. And I think it's also because I know Bo-Katan said that it's the last one, but I honestly think that technology, and I think my friend Mike was the one who had texted me, like, oh, do you think this is what eventually becomes the box that they put Luminara in? I like to think that the Empire uses technology that's supposed to be out of illegal in a way, but they use it. I mean, you look at Sabine's weapon.
Just because the technology is not there available, it doesn't mean that the knowledge that brought it to life, to reality,
is gone. Exactly.
So the principles and the knowledge is there for anybody who finds it to replicate it. So that may have been the last box that the actual Mandalorians constructed.
Yeah.
But the technology, look how they use the technology that's being
created
against her own people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anytime anybody discovers anything puts it out there,
weaponized,
it's in the hands of so many that may not have the actual thought and care.
Mm-hmm. You don't really think about that because to you, this is just knowledge. But for someone else, it could be a weapon. Mm. It's not in your head because that shouldn't be the case.
Yes, yeah. That's not how you're seeing it.
Yeah.
Like I said, the knowledge could have been there and then the Empire just found it and replicated it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't know. It's just a theory. But it seems very plausible.
Mm-hmm.
So Order 66, the fact that when things go down and Rex tells her Fine Fives, if it weren't for Fives and even Tup, who had his chip malfunction, if those things had not happened, Rex and Ahsoka would not have survived.
Nope.
That at all. maybe Rex. I don't know, because at that point, if she had been gunned down, she wouldn't have released Maul and they would have been on their way to wherever it is that they were going. But had it not been for Fives, the unsung hero, things would not have turned out the way that they turned out. Oh, Fives.
Oh, man.
But what bugs me is just that I thought Rex would have gone as far as to take it out himself, knowing what Fives had gone through. So it's just like he took that information, but he didn't act on it. So he had to leave it for Ahsoka to do it.
Because
at a very crucial time.
To me, it feels like...
not wanting to believe...
Yeah, sort of like, okay, and he actually says something to that effect. He says, you know, I'm going to say because I owe it to Fives that this is what I think because of what he says. Mm-hmm. But is it something I 100% believe? I don't know. Mm. I just owe it to him to say it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And whoever is listening, just do what you must with it. Mm-hmm. I think he was at that struggle of, I cannot believe that they will do this to us.
Right. And it was also passed off as it's an inhibitor chip in that it controls your aggression. So maybe he didn't want to take it out because he didn't want to be...
afraid of what could happen if they take it.
So like, I guess I do see it. I just wish that Rex had fully believed Fives and had gone through with it.
Well, he did the best he could. He didn't abandon his friend. He didn't betray his friend. He didn't tell his friend, no, I don't believe you. You know, he was there from the beginning to the end with Fives. But then again, he was also true to his own beliefs. Like,
right. No, I got you. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love how the first thing Ahsoka tells Maul is, don't make me regret this. And you can believe it that when Maul gets into that ship, she regrets it so much. Yeah. So when rewatching the episodes, I laughed because I was like, oh my God, that's the first thing you tell him. And it's the thing that you end up regretting. Part of me wishes that Maul and Ahsoka had teamed up. I don't know. I just want to see them fight together on the stage. It would have been very cool to see them team up. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one. What about you, Maul? What do you think? Would that have been interesting?
I don't doubt that it would have been interesting, but I personally really don't want to, because this is the thing. Don't play with fire if you don't want to get burned.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? True. And if you play with it, and well, this is a perfect anecdote about you growing up.
What did I do? Oh, when I got burned?
Yeah, I used to iron my own clothes. And one of the things that you kept doing was coming to the freaking table, ironing table, and wanting to put your hands on top of it. And I kept saying, get away, you're going to get burned. Get away, you're going to get burned. So you know what happened? One day, I let you touch it. You want to touch it? Go ahead. Do it. And what happened?
I touched it.
And what happened?
I got burned.
You know, there's a point where you keep telling somebody, don't do something because this is what's going to happen. And you can say so many times. And until that person experiences, they're not gonna. And after that, I think that not only show you don't touch it because you're gonna get burned, but it show you, you know what? I'm gonna listen to mom more often.
This is true. To the point where I just ask you all the time now, mom, what do you think? What do you think? And you're like, stop. You can make your own decisions.
Yeah, you have all the knowledge now.
No, I still need your opinion. But anyway, yes, when you play with fire, you're little fire, yes, you're gonna get burned.
So to me, it would have been very interesting to see that, but then it could have hurt Ahsoka in so many ways that I really didn't want to see it.
I got you. I got you. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I feel like maybe to gain her favor, he would have actually gone to the lengths to help her and Rex. No, you don't think so? I don't know. Maybe Maul, I'm putting... Maul, to, maybe
yeah.
Maul's
you,
final...
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I'm falling from Maul's speech.
You know, you're so funny because you have all these levels where I hate Maul, I like Maul, I hate Maul, I like Maul. It's like, make up your mind, which one is it?
No, when it comes to Ezra, I hate Maul. But when it comes to something like this, I'm like, man, Maul could have actually been very useful. So, yeah, it's funny. Yeah. I have a love-hate relationship with him.
Yes, yes, you do.
But, you know, part of me also likes the fact that they didn't work with each other and that he ended up betraying her in that way by taking the ship. And that in Rebels, we see that they're not like... she obviously does not trust him for reasons that we see here. But it's sort of like the fire. It's like the me and the iron. Ezra kept being told, you can't trust him. You can't trust him. When he does, that's when he learns.
Yeah.
That I should not have trusted him. So, yeah, it's like, see, Ezra and I are so similar.
There's some things. And you know what? Just so that everybody knows, it wasn't a huge burn, and I didn't really let her get very badly injured.
No, I was okay.
It was enough so that she knew that was hot.
Yeah. Mommy was the best mom, and she is still the best mom. I love how Ahsoka ends up relying on the droids for help. Little Cheep, Gigi, R7. So sad.
Oh, my droids. Of all the things that really touched me and made me actually cry was... My heartbreak was watching those droids being destroyed.
Yeah.
Like, God.
And we actually see one of them fall, R7, when Ahsoka is desperately trying to hold back the ship. Even though in that moment, it's very basic. She's trying to hold onto the ship. He goes to help. But you can see it. You can try to extrapolate a bigger lesson from it. You know, when you try to hold on to something, other people are going to get hurt by you being so attached.
Yeah.
So I really like how you can extract these sort of lessons from very basic things that are happening.
And that goes through all the instances in which she was learning her last one lesson of letting go.
Yes. And I love how Cheep in particular was so much like Chopper. And I love that he was voiced by Dave, just like Chopper. And
I love his little salute. Like, yes,
very, ma'am. Very, very Chop.
Yeah.
And it always reminds me of what Leia says in The Rise of Skywalker, never underestimate a droid. And also what I really liked about the droid's presence and helping is that for the Clone Wars, the Separatist army were droids.
Yeah.
So when Order 66 happens and the switch is flipped... So now the troopers are bad, and the droids, in this instance, are the good guys.
Yeah.
Are trying to help
represent
her. Oh, and then we get to when Ahsoka is trying to take away the chip from Rex. You know, they can't locate it, so she has to say the mantra, you know, I am the one with the Force, and the Force is with me. And at first I was like, how does this help find a chip? And I had to sit down and actually, like, think about it. But... In a way, it's sort of like meditating. When you meditate, you have to. It's clearing your mind.
It wasn't just Ahsoka saying it.
It was Rex
tuning
too.
with Rex.
Yeah. And in making that instance, meditation is to clear one's mind. With him saying it, it kind of cleared up the fog that is in his head
and made the ship
more
visible.
Yeah. So I really like how you have the mystical side of it. Helping the more scientific side of it.
That, again, goes to balance. There's a balance between technology and spiritual.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And the both are more powerful when they work together instead of against each other.
And then when they get to the place where they can open the main hangar doors... Mm-hmm. What I really liked about that scene when it's opening and they're like, you can see the light shining on them as it's opening. Way back earlier in the start of the series, remember that the episodes where R2-D2 had been lost or taken and it was replaced by another droid, Goldie? Uh-huh. Ahsoka kept calling it Goldie. They get to the point where Ahsoka and Anakin and the troopers, including Rex, who's holding Goldie, the doors open and they have to jump out. it really reminded me of that, where they like, there's doors are opening and they have no choice but to eventually jump to safety. And it's an interesting comparison too, because Goldie turned out to be a double agent for the Separatists, and the clones are essentially working for the Sith. For the bad guys.
Yeah.
So I just really like comparing those two scenes together, and how one of them actually was just very fun because there's Rex holding Goldie falling. And then here it's just very dire.
Yeah.
Which is the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Ahsoka not wanting to hurt the troopers. I know people were like, oh, she did hurt troopers. I'm like, yeah, she did, but it was in self-defense. She didn't do it purposefully.
Yeah. There's a difference right there, mm-hmm. where when you choose to do harm as opposed to you doing harm because you have no choice.
Exactly.
You know, the word is right there, choice.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And this is who she is. She's choosing not to harm them, but if she cannot help it, that, you know,
that's a different story. And of course, it hurt me when Rex is like, I don't know if you're getting this, but they're going to kill us. Yes. And he's crying behind his helmet.
Because he doesn't want to die, but his brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And the whole situation is stressful and emotional for him because these are his brothers.
And he understands what they're in because he was in it.
And they have fought alongside the Jedi for so long. They're a team.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they were not the perfect Jedi or the perfect person, you know, like we got to see a few of them who disregarded the clones and treated them like nothing.
Yeah.
Even if that were true, still, it's a partnership.
Yeah.
And it's hard when a relationship ends. And this is what it is. It's a relationship ending.
Yeah.
And it's sad and it breaks you.
Mm-hmm. Just the whole thing of the troopers turning on them and them having to survive. It's very Anakin turning on them and the Jedi having to survive.
Yeah.
What comes. I like also how it reminded me of what Ezra said. How we choose to fight is just as important as what we fight for. So how you go about it is important, not just your goal, but how you do it. And she was exemplifying that in that moment. I want to survive. That's the goal. But I'm not willing to take out people
purposefully
to get to it.
But not just indiscriminately, like if they were nothing.
Exactly. Yeah.
They are something to me.
Yeah.
They mean something.
And my friend Zoe from Star Wars Geeko, she made a great point, which was normally when a ship is in distress like that, the troopers find a way to get off it to survive. But here, their only purpose, the only thing that they see is trying to kill the Jedi. And, like, they weren't fearing for their lives at all.
At that moment, they were not autonomous. At that moment, they had absolutely no choice and no control over their own lives and their own bodies.
That's what sucks.
And that's the sad part of it, that they had absolutely no control.
Right. Over their own lives, over wanting to survive. It was just trying to get the Jedi.
They were given an order, and that order was it.
Yeah.
To whatever happens.
And again, I'm curious, is Order 66 something that they can turn off, like after the fact? Or is this something that's ongoing for years? It just doesn't end for them, like until they die. Like the only thing...
Are they all going to be controlled their lives with
a chip? Yeah.
With that chip.
Or is it turned off at some point, like when they reach maximum age or whatever, and then they realize what they've done? I don't know. Dave has to give me the answer to this. It's probably very obvious that they keep the chip on.
Yeah, because one of the suborders of Order 66 is that clone that doesn't go
through
it's going to be considered. So this could be a way of using the whole thing against them as well, against each other.
Yes. Yeah. So, I like I said, it's probably a simple answer, but the way Dave goes about answering questions,
that's what makes the experience
exactly. So, like I know it's probably a very simple answer, but his answer tends to add a few stuff in there that just blows my mind more than half the time. So, anyway. Oh, and I missed the first time around. when Jesse says that they had special orders from Darth Sidious to take out Ahsoka Tano, I missed that the first time. I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize that. Of course Palpatine would have a special order to take her out.
Which was a very good strategy because Ahsoka wouldn't even know that Darth Sidious was after her as well, you know?
Yeah.
So to her, okay, so if the order says to kill the Jedi, I'm not a Jedi, so maybe this is going to work, you know? But it ends up that
it's it wasn't even that. It was the specific order to hunt her specifically, not just the Jedi. But yeah, I thought that was fascinating. The fact that, of course, Palpatine would do this because she's a clear connection to Anakin, just like Luke is. And they have a potential to bring out the good, whatever good exists in Vader. So yeah. That was interesting.
And this to me goes to the level of at which Palpatine will go to control everything and every single little aspect.
Yeah.
Because as we were discussing earlier, we don't think that whatever Ahsoka was going to tell Anakin was going to change him because of who he is and the way he perceived and saw things. But here is Palpatine somehow showing just a little bit of fear.
Just in case.
Just in case. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know.
It's a possibility there.
Yeah. Let me eliminate it, you know?
The various threats that can make that happen. Yeah.
So it may say a lot about his mastermind and his ability to foresee, but it also shows you the level of control that he wants. And he was seeking that even the most minuscule thing that could in any way alter in the most minuscule way his plans needed to be eradicated.
Which is why Maul had to work in the shadows.
Yeah.
Because he was a threat.
Yeah.
Yeah. We already talked about Ahsoka and her letting go moment and how it reminded me of Ezra. And I just really loved how it kind of came full circle because Ahsoka is the one to be there for Ezra and to remind him that this is the lesson that you need to learn.
Yep.
Which is a lesson that she actually had to learn herself in these episodes. Oh, yeah, and I put it hurt my soul when the droids were killed.
Yeah.
As it hurt your soul, too.
That's what I keep telling you. Yeah. Like, yes, the whole thing was sad and it was anxious and it made me had all these emotions. But the part that really, like, broke me, like, I felt it in the deepest depth of my soul was when those droids died.
Yeah. The ship falling, actually, and I know I've mentioned this in other podcasts, but the ship falling reminded me of in Lost Stars. You don't even have to read the story to know it, but the cover itself has a picture of a Star Destroyer falling. And it's when the Battle of Jakku, when the Empire has fallen and the ships are now falling because of the rebel activity and whatnot. I like how you have this ship that's falling in a similar way, but it's because of the Empire taking over. But in Lost Stars, which is very similar in how it falls and whatnot, entering the atmosphere and whatever, the Empire's ending. So it kind of bookends in the same way with the Star Destroyer falling. And then Jesse's tattoo, of course, is the Republic symbol. My friend Corey mentioned how focusing on his helmet and the symbol is just the death of the Republic, the end of the Republic. And I thought, oh my God, that's something I didn't even think about. Thank you, Corey. I just really love that. And it just made me even more sad. When do you think the scenes with the Empire take place? When do you personally think? So it's Revenge of the Sith, 19 years later is A New Hope, and 5 years before A New Hope is Rebels. Do you have like an idea of when Vader showed up? Like what point in the timeline?
In that last scene when he's in the planet?
Yes.
I will have to say maybe either a little bit before Rebels or during the times of Rebels.
Okay.
Or the beginning of Rebels. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
Like that, because we know that he makes his appearance and he battles Ahsoka.
Yes.
So, and we know time has passed.
Yes, because of the ship.
Not only the season is changed.
But the ship itself.
But the corroding and the damage and the... I feel that is either a little bit before Rebels or right there when Rebels starts.
Gotcha. My friend Andy said that he suspects it's when... Remember in the beginning of season 2, Siege of Lothal, when the Ghost goes back to Phoenix Squadron, but Vader is right behind and ends up decimating the Phoenix Squadron ships.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, Ahsoka reaches out to whoever this Vader is, and Vader also senses her, and that's when she realizes that it's Anakin, and she ends up, like, fainting. And he goes, "The apprentice lives." My friend Andy thinks that it happens after that, because then he's on search for traces of her. And I'm like, oh, cool. That's a cool idea. So it could be, like what you said, in the Rebels era.
I think it's before then, only because of the, what's it called? The bird, the condor?
Morai?
The Morai. Mm-hmm. Only because of the Morai.
Okay.
To me, the Morai symbolizes that connection with Rebels.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Not just Ahsoka, but with Rebels itself. So, to me, that's why I think it's either right before Rebels starts or at the very beginning of Rebels.
I actually like that. Yeah, I don't think I've heard people say that it was at the beginning of
because
Rebels.
I know that Morai is always connected to Ahsoka directly.
Right.
But I think that it has a meaning, a purpose within the whole Rebels universe, mm-hmm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, when he picks up those lightsabers and he looks up, mm-hmm, that lightsaber, mm-hmm, he looks up and sees the Morai,
mm-hmm,
that's what to me symbolizes. Okay, we're getting close. We're right there.
Got it.
You know, he's gonna learn Ahsoka is alive.
Got it. I like that. Yeah, yeah. For me, I forget what I was theorizing. I thought it was honestly, and this is what my emotional side, I guess, a little hint of Anakin was curious as to what happened with Ahsoka. And I don't know where in the timeline, but maybe a few years into the Empire, so maybe it's still early on. When he gets there and he picks up the saber the way he does, there's something about it that makes me think, and then he ends up taking it with him, where it makes me think that it's just a little bit of Anakin somewhere in there that's making this happen. I don't know. This probably doesn't make any sense.
No, it does. It does. It absolutely does. That there's definitely, you see in a lot of the behavior that there's still something there. I just go along with the Morai thing.
Yeah.
So I put the whole thing together. It wasn't just picking up the saber and he'd been there,
but
the Morai as well.
Got it.
So it's sort of like that whole scene.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, I had to write a whole article on what Morai means. So here are the various meanings that I came up with. The fact that Ahsoka lives. So I really like how when you see Morai flying, especially in Twilight of the Apprentice, and Vader is like limping away, and Morai flies, and then that's when you see like the shadow of Ahsoka, so and people are like, is she alive? I don't know. And of course, we know now that she was alive. So I like to think that Morai symbolizes that she's living. So that bird flying just symbolizes that she's out there. She's doing her stuff. A lot of people think that Ahsoka is close by when the bird is there. I don't think that's... I mean, I put that there because... I don't think it's because she's physically there. I think it's because her signature is still there. Her lightsaber is there. The people who... The troopers that painted their helmets like her are there. So I think Morai just sensed that there was something happening there, and that's why she's there. But not necessarily that Ahsoka's really, like, close by. The fact that it's a beacon of hope, like the bird itself just symbolizes that Ahsoka is carrying out what needs to be done. I like that symbolism. And Anakin is not completely lost because of the fact that it represents the light side of the Force, and it was so out of reach. You could put together that Anakin, the light side, is too far from him, but it's still there, present within him. So I like thinking about it that way, where she symbolizes the light side. It's too far out of reach for him because of what he did, of what he's doing, but it's still present inside him. So yeah, all the various meanings about Morai. What do you think Vader was thinking when he picked up the lightsaber? Because I had asked my friend that question, and we were talking it out. And I think personally, we both actually came to this conclusion where he was maybe recalling the memory, like the motion of giving it to her.
Yeah.
But it didn't carry the emotion that memory would have. I feel like he would... What was it that I wrote? I said that he's not really appreciating the emotions behind it, and he's kind of twisting whatever sentiment is there to fit his new agenda.
Yeah, like, she betrayed me, and she, you know.
He's twisting it.
Yeah.
To fit his now new agenda, like, who he is at this moment.
Yeah.
So that's what I think he's thinking. He's just recalling the motion, recalling who it was given to, but there's no emotion.
One more person I need to haunt eliminate. And make sure that I eliminate. Yeah.
And why do you think he took the saber? Because that was interesting to me. Like, if he didn't care, he would have tossed it back.
Oh, no, he does care.
Yeah.
Whether it's a positive thought or a negative thought, he still cares.
That's true.
Whether it's because he still cares for her, or whether it's because he wants to hunt her, the care is still there. I have to take this. Mm-hmm. This is a symbol.
Right.
And you carry the symbols of what you believe in.
Mm. I also thought it could have been like a trophy. And my mind went into like a very weird path where I started thinking, oh, maybe he wants to give it to someone who has psychometric powers and can tell you, like, when they hold it, it can tell you
if the person is alive or not, or where they are.
But given what happens in Rebels, that he suddenly says the apprentice lives, obviously he didn't know that she was alive.
Now, to me, it's just a symbol to him of what he lost, or what he believes is a betrayal, and he just needs to carry it with him to remind him every step of the way.
Right, yeah. That's true. Yeah, because Ahsoka did leave him, mm-hmm. and it could be considered a betrayal in some way. In his twisted mind. And then finally, some of my favorite Captain Rex and Ahsoka moments. Well, I mean, favorite in that they were brilliant, but not because they were happy.
Yeah.
But Rex crying, especially when he's struggling to hold back from shooting Ahsoka. You can see the tear coming out, and then again, crying later on. It's just my heart. And him not liking being a commander. He's like, I didn't like the title anyway. Because a lot of people were like, well, he's Captain Rex in Rebels. How is he a commander right now? It's because he got demoted. But he didn't like it anyway. And Ahsoka shooting her way out when she's surrounded by all of the troopers and she uses all their blaster fire to make that hole. I thought that was just so, so cool. And then when she uses her lightsabers to make that circle around her. Yeah, that was so awesome. And she was just amazing. And it's funny because I think, I forget who it was, but someone said that his wife saw the arc for the first time. Like anything Star Wars, the Clone Wars, that was the arc that they saw for the first time. And she's like, this Ahsoka's amazing. Who is she? So I thought that was really cool. And did you have any other favorite moments?
No, just the one that you have there. Not a baby. He wasn't a baby.
Oh, I put young baby Caleb. I put in my notes, young baby Caleb Duke.
He wasn't a baby.
But he has a baby face.
But he was a kid. He was probably about the same age that Ahsoka was when she came to Anakin.
He was, yeah.
You know? So, that part there.
Yeah. There was one thing my friend Zoe said that she wishes there had been a montage sort of like in Revenge of the Sith where we see certain Jedi being killed when Order 66 happens. Obviously, it would have taken away from what was happening with Ahsoka and Rex. But I really would have liked a little montage, too, where it's not the traditional people we see, like Ayla and Plo and Mace. But I would have loved to have seen Deppa, Caleb's master, or Cal from the first Jedi First Order. So it would have been really cool to see it from a different perspective, where it was people who had survived escaping rather than being killed. But anyway, it is what it is, and I love the way it is as it stands right now. Oh, and then when Ahsoka and Anakin say their goodbyes, it was very reminiscent of Twilight of the Apprentice, when they're standing that far off from each other, and she's standing there as a grown Ahsoka, and he's standing there as Vader. So it was very reminiscent of that. Oh, yeah, and I already mentioned Gar Saxon. So. And Fenn, I wish Fenn was there. So did you have any overall thoughts, Mommy?
it was awesome. It was amazing. Would I want it more? Of course, I would have wanted more. But what it was, it is. And I'm satisfied with it.
Oh, yeah. Same, same. Yeah. I never thought we would get this. So yeah. The fact that we did, it's outstanding. I know there's so much more that we didn't talk about. These were like just the major points. But
I just have to say one last time, Dave!
Yeah. Yes.
Dave, what are you doing to us?
Come on, Dave. What are you doing? Torturing our souls.
Breaking our hearts.
Yep, yep. Just like what he does with everything else that he makes. But yes, thank you to the Star Wars The Clone Wars crew and cast for the fantastic work that they did.
Yeah.
It's a masterpiece. So yes. We're very thankful that we got to see it in our lifetime. So that's it for today's episode. I don't know when we'll record next, but I hope you all stay safe during these troubling times. And so, Mark, where can listeners find you in the meantime?
Oh, listener can find me with the handle at Hubian214.
And listeners can also find me on Twitter by searching for @BlueJayGuys. If you haven't done so already, tune into Unmistakably Star Wars, Sky Talkers Podcast, and Friends of the Force Podcast for more Star Wars news and discussion.
Until who knows
when. Who knows when. Yeah.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.